Podcast today's show at rte.ie/todaywithseanorourke.
Well, in the week gone by, we got closer to the exit of the bailout. We bid farewell to the Troika, at least in regard to their representatives coming to town. It rained for most of the midterm break, but the well ran dry in Dublin, in a manner of speaking. More news of property prices rising in the capital, and we still await a confirmation of a referendum on same-sex marriage. To discuss and debate these topics, I'm joined in studio now by columnist Michael Clifford, political editor with the Sunday Independent, John Drennan and Terry Prone of the Communications Clinic. Good morning to you all. But I think, as ever, we're going to start with the take of one Mr. Oliver Callan. He has been monitoring the Cabinet, even though it was a week off for parliamentarians, or at least trying to tie down the Taoiseach.
And you're going to hear me roar.
Morning.
Leo! Oh, is it lunchtime already?
No, Taoiseach. You're actually going out today.
Out? Mm-hmm. Nobody told me. What? Normally I shine a torch into my eyes for an hour or so to acclimatise to the daylight.
You'll be fine. The handlers want to release you for a quick trip to the RDS.
Oh, who's on? Neil Young, is it? No. I can photobomb him, you know.
No, it's the Web Summit.
Wait, is that something to do with Halloween? Is it the spiders and the bats and stuff?
It's a major global technology event.
No problem to me with me new smartphone. Look.
That's a Casio calculator, Taoiseach.
And they want me to chair it, do they? Make the keynote speech, maybe. I know all about the cloud? That's why they chose Ireland with its perfect climate for cloud formation and the jobs that have evaporated in the cloud.
They just want you to ring a bell, Taoiseach.
Ring a bell? Ha ha! Yes. A highly skilled tech job for a cloudy Taoiseach. I can do it. What's it for?
It's to open the NASDAQ stock exchange. A very important job, Taoiseach.
Of course it is.
Oh, yes.
I can even debate the cloud if you
want. No debate. Just ring the bell and leave.
Ring the bell and leave.
Exactly.
That'll remind me of my childhood Halloweens in Castle Bar.
By the way, have you got enough to drink down here? What were the water shortages?
Oh, Leo. Yeah. I was so thirsty for the last few days, I cracked open the worst of the Dáil wine.
What?
Half a bottle of Lucinda. That's all I could manage. It was fairly unpalatable now, as you'd expect.
I wasn't even aware we had a Lucinda brand.
Feckin' Blue Nun, Leo. Oh. Blue Nun.
Right.
I've ahead of me like a bag of teddies after it. I'll just have to go for a bath.
A bath? How can you find the
water? Of lilt.
Oh. I'll call down for you later on, Taoiseach.
Good luck. I'll be practicing on me bicycle bell here. I am so proud to open the Blue Tech stock. What was it again? It's such a funny bell.
Taoiseach Enda Kenyaka, Oliver Callan there at the Web Summit, and we had a lot of guests from that particular show on this programme in the week gone by, and Oliver Callan is on with Callan's Kicks tonight on Radio 1 at 6:30 as usual. And before we talk to our gathering group in studio, we want to go now to London and talk to Michael White, late of the Guardian newspaper. Michael, quite a sensational twist in that media hacking trial, a phone hacking trial in London yesterday, when it emerged that Rebecca Brooks and her colleague Andy Coulson, her successor as editor of the News of the World, had been having a secret affair for at least 6 years. I suppose a taste of their own medicine as former Red Top editors was what emerged in court.
I suppose that's certainly one way of looking at it. A lot of my friends have said to me, you know, it just shows the hypocrisy of these people. They're going on about other people's affairs while having one themselves. That's true, although I know all these people, and I felt a bit sorry for them having that very needy letter from Rebecca Brooks, which the coppers found, read out for all the world to see. You know, they bleed like the rest of us, even though they have been pretty tough tabloid editors in their time, and we all know what that means. So, difficult one. But the prosecution took the view it was necessary to do that to prove just how close these two were, and they wouldn't have had secrets from each other, including secrets about phone hacking, of course.
And Andrew Edis QC for the prosecution, making the point that this revelation isn't designed to invade their privacy, not that that ever stopped them in their past, but to help the prosecution's case.
Yes, it's saying, look, we allege that phone hacking was organised on a pretty industrial scale by the News of the World, and other things as well, paying off policemen for information and officials. Fellow at the Ministry of Defence got 40,000. And it's inconceivable that the bosses of these newspapers, the editors, didn't know about this. And it's inconceivable, too, they didn't talk about it to each other. And that's important from the prosecution's case. They're trying to prove sort of conspiracy against the public here, both the bribe officials and to pay and to organise the hacking, of course. They paid a lot of money for that. So it is relevant to the case. They're saying these people knew each other even better than you might think. He also said yesterday, it's not as if it's exactly war and peace, the News of the World. It's quite easy to read, and it only comes out 50 times a year. They knew what was going on.
And Michael, Rebecca Brooks, formerly I think Rebecca Wade, she rose to the position of Chief Executive Officer of News International, Rupert Murdoch's company, was at his side I think at some of those hearings in the Commons. She would have been seen as somebody who was as tough as they come in the media, and it's pretty tough across where you are. And yet the tone of that letter that she wrote to her former lover as they were saying farewell, it was, I think, simpering is the word that came to my mind.
Well, different things will come to different readers' minds. I thought I used the word, I think, a second ago. It was needy. Yes, she's a formidable figure, Rebecca Brooks, Rebecca Wade. I can't help thinking, I thought it when they were in at the Leveson inquiry. These are Andy Coulson, Rebecca Brooks. These are, you know, working-class kids with no university education who came from, you know, Coulson from Essex and Rebecca Brooks from Warrington. That's a bit closer to you. And with no background, talented and ambitious people, they're the ones in the dock, not the boss class whose bidding they did. And, you know, you wonder what other people knew, don't you? But it's they're the fall guys for this one, I feel. And, you know, that's not justifying what they did, but
What they're alleged to have done, I suppose it has to be stated by way of a cautionary note. But
yes,
Michael,
Of course you should.
As a matter of interest, to the reading and listening and watching public maybe here and to perhaps a fair extent across where you are in the UK as well, this will have come as a sensational twist in the trial. But is it the old story that people on the inside of the media in Fleet Street, or what used to be called Fleet Street, they knew this was going to happen, this was going to come out?
Well, I was told a few months ago, there was a story in one of the London Sunday tabloids, the Mail on Sunday, which said there's this fantastic affair, and golly gosh, if only we could tell you about it. But of course it was sub judice, because I don't know whether people in the News of the World and the Sun knew there was an affair going on 10 years ago. I don't work for those newspapers and they don't tell me their secrets. People sometimes know about office affairs. Again, your listeners will have views about this, and sometimes other people are quite good at covering them up. So we don't know. But it was known around Fleet Street when the police discovered these letters, and as I say, it was hinted at heavily, but it was sub judice, and the newspapers were on their best behaviour about breaching the sub judice rules on something so sensitive as this.
Michael, thank you for that observation on that letter. Michael White there, formerly of The Guardian, back here in studio, John Drennan, Michael Clifford and Terry Prone. Terry, you wouldn't get some of it in Mills and Boone, would you? The editor would send you away to get something a bit more
credible.
Yes.
The really awful thing about this is that it isn't the letter itself that is so arresting. It is the tone of the letter. You call it simpering. I would call it abject. And it's one of the things that I'm constantly saying to clients of all ages, but particularly young ones, don't put it in writing. And if you're going to put it in writing, do not put it in an email, because it lasts forever. This computer was found in her wardrobe. But even if she had taken it out into her back garden and taken a sledgehammer to it, it still existed somewhere and it was going to bite her.
You just reminded me of my colleague Pádraig O'Ciara, late of this parish. She used to have the Connemara mother's advice to her son: never put anything in writing, never tell them if you own property, and only give them presents they can eat.
O'Ciara, trust me. The thing is that if you have written a letter like this, it's a good letter. But once you read somebody else's love letters, they are cringy. I mean, if you listen to it, most important, the fact is that you are my very best friend. I tell you everything. I confide in you. I seek your advice. I love you, care about you, worry about you. We laugh and cry together. That must have felt perfect when it was going out. She could never have expected that it would be read by millions right across the world. And it, it's awful when it's read by a third party.
And most incriminatingly, potentially, there are hundreds of things which have happened since Saturday that I would normally share with you.
Well, there are two particular statements in that letter that are serve the case of the lawyers. The first is the one you've just read. Hundreds of things. That means that she would normally have shared virtually everything with them. And the second thing is in the bit that I read, which was, I confide in you, I tell you everything. There is no way now that either of them can come back on the notion that neither of them knew what the other was doing.
Michael Clifford, what do you make of all this?
It also shows how wrapped up in work the whole thing was. Again, referencing the letter, don't want to go too much, but I confide in you, I seek your advice. I mean, that says it all to me personally, how much the whole thing was wrapped up in work as far as the two of them were concerned. But, I mean, you know, it's difficult to get away from the fact that Schadenfreude, this is the situation the word was invented from. And I think particularly of David Blunkett getting a call from Andy Coulson and being told, we have this, you're having an affair, look, I don't want to do you damage, we're going to run with it, etc., etc., at the very time when he, first of all, allegedly how the information was got, whether Coulson knew about it or not, it's for a court to decide, but how it was got was by tapping Blunkett's phone. And at the very same time, he was involved in an affair with Rebecca Brooks. And it should be pointed out, David Blunkett wasn't even married at the time.
And John Drennan, I think it's something that women journalists particularly would be embarrassed by, because in my experience, women journalists of my acquaintance, they're not as soft and simpering as letters like that would portray them. Anything but. I mean, they feel betrayed, I think. Some I've been speaking to about it.
But I don't know. Women journalists are certainly not soft and simpering. That is for sure. I suppose no one's love letters, I think, as Terry referenced earlier on, no one's love letters, even written, and this is a love letter, written in great haste, unless one is perhaps Shakespeare, look good under the under the cruel eye. But I think Michael White made two very interesting points there. The first one being that, you know, they bleed like the rest of us.
Yes.
And the second one being that they are the fall guys for the, there are others who profited far more. I mean, this is a lethal letter. There's no doubt about that. I suppose one could only wish that one had editors that would write you letters saying, you are my best friend. I tell you everything. I confide in you and I seek your advice.
I mean, to be fair, it would be difficult. I disagree with that in terms of the fall guys. It would be difficult to describe either of them. As far, if it was the reporter, grand, one thing, but to describe the editor in both situations as fall guys.
When she was getting bonuses of a million a year.
Yeah. But in a very high profile game, I mean, she might have been getting bonuses of a year, and there's no doubt that she is no angel. I think she even had altercations with Grant Mitchell of Private Eye fame. But if she was getting bonuses of a million, there were others that were probably profiting far more.
It's guaranteed to keep that trial on the front pages and getting lots of newsprint for the weeks and months ahead. The water shortage currently affecting Dublin and parts of Kildare and Meath as well. Michael, I think you've got young kids, so you're filling the saucepans up ahead of the weekend in dread.
Yeah. I mean, it is crazy in this day and age that it should come down to this, you know. I mean, but what strikes me in particular is the complete lack of reserve that's there, the complete lack of contingency for anything happening. Okay. And something can happen in the production in these waste treatment plants, there's no question about that. But the fact that there is no backup is unforgivable. And in particular, it's 2006 since a report was first drawn up that pointed out we're going to need these reserves, and nothing has been done yet. And any new scheme that's supposed to be coming from the Shannon, we're told by one of the senior engineers that it won't even be going to onboard Planola for up to 2 years. I mean, it's...
And John, just our luck that it would happen to coincide with the hosting of the Web Summit, 5,000 visiting whiz kids and 5,000 of our own congregating at the RDS.
Indeed, and smiling and beaming at these dreamed of jobs, and then we find out that, you know, water everywhere, but not even for the whiz kids. But more importantly still, in terms of multinationals, and particularly those such as Intel, multinationals prize access to water in a lot of these places very highly. And once again, a crisis coming down the road for 10 years, I suppose. suppose my former colleague and senator from Laois, John Whelan, will again be bringing forward the issue of the Garry Hinch Reservoir.
And, well, indeed, he did yesterday morning, I think in the Star newspaper and on Morning Ireland. But riding to the rescue, around the corner, we have Irish Water. Now, there was a man on from there, Gerard Grant, the head of asset management at Irish Water. He was on primetime last night with Robert Short. Let's hear a small extract.
We will be responsible for delivering water services and wastewater services across the country. And we are putting in a huge effort to realise the capability within Irish Water to be able to do that. Clearly working with the local authorities in a partnership arrangement, but leveraging the strength of a singular organisation, particularly focused on the underinvestment that's taken place, the fact that we have to generate a sustainable revenue stream, the fact that we have to leverage that.
But supposing you're faced with a situation like what the Dublin authorities are faced with at the moment, what would you be doing that would be any different?
Well, first of all, the Dublin authorities, I think are doing a very good job in the face of great difficulty. In fact, the Greater Dublin area has had enormous economic growth, and they've done a tremendous job to leverage the capacity of the River Liffey primarily to meet that demand over the last 30 or 40 years. But the really important point is that we have a secure, sustainable and adequate revenue stream to leverage the investment we need. The major scheme for Dublin has been talked about, but we have much more than that to do.
Terry Prawn, what on heaven's name was all that about? An awful lot of talk about leverage. I think it was used in the space of about 8 minutes, five times.
I would love to jump all over this man and say, you really, really, really need training by me. But the issue is actually not the man, because I watched that whole item and the man was talking. He clearly is not a man who regularly talks in media. And so he uses secondary phrases and things like realise the capability of the water asset and stuff like that. The problem was that he shouldn't have been there at all. I have no idea what persuaded Irish Water to put him on, but he was in a situation where he could not win, Sean. The fact is that he followed a package where a man who runs something like five Indian restaurants was complaining, saying this was outrageous, it wasn't the first time. And then this man from Irish Water, who won't be in charge until January, comes on and is being asked to predict in the future what he would have done in the past.
But he's going to leverage a whole lot of things. What does that mean?
If you want me to make a plug, I'm a great trainer of people speaking English and I'd love to work with this man. But the fact is that last night he simply shouldn't have been there. But the second thing is I need to absolutely fight with my colleague on the right, Mr. Clifford, because he is saying a thing that all of media is saying, and let's be clear, I have no interest here. He's saying, this is ridiculous. Wait a second, folks. A lot of water came down from the sky. A chemical was identified that shouldn't be there. The water authority said, do you know something? We're not going to release all this water until we find out what it is that's doing it. I think that's very good. I don't want a water authority now or in the future with Irish Water who says, ha, God, we've a brand new chemical here. Don't worry, I'll send it out,
Terry,
to people's
taps and reserves. The big issue is
now,
that no reserve contingency.
Can I deal with the reserve
that
issue? This is another thing. And you two as journalists are, well, you three as journalists are totally responsible for this. I have been working, 20 years ago I was working on water issues with the then Dublin Corpo. Do you remember the ad, the wonderful ad of the poor little goldfish and the water level coming down, down, down until the poor little goldfish was suffocating for lack of water? I was around that time. And every time we got a government of any hue, because as you know I'm politically promiscuous, any time we got a government to the point where they would say we need to invest heavily in long-term infrastructure for water to stop leaks and stuff, somebody would say, no, we have to solve a more immediate problem now. In Ireland, we are incapable of thinking
and
in the long term.
Mr. Brandon Howland put the kibosh on a plan to install meters at everybody's house, and 800,000 houses later, or some such number, we're starting off on that again, John.
Indeed, it is the joy of Irish politics that outside of knowing Terry's past CV and Terry's hope for future CV, we have decided, first of all, we'll install the water meters even when there's no water. I think, looking at and listening to the poor unfortunate individual, leverage generally means good intentions. When they start talking about leveraging capital or leveraging resources or so forth.
But the word used be valuable, at least in two of those uses of the word leverage that we heard earlier. The Liffey.
Indeed. A small river when compared to the Shannon, it has to be said. The other thing which struck me was the remarkable serendipity of the event, where one had the World Web, which is full of people who do smart jobs and who work with computers and are therefore far more clever than the rest of us. But at the end of the day, even those who do smart jobs need people who do not so smart jobs or dumb jobs, such as digging up water holes and filling them and replacing pipes and so forth and all the rest of it. So perhaps the government might learn from this more of an emphasis on the not so smart jobs that they sometimes forget about.
Michael, we said farewell to the Troika's representatives, or at least we think we did, because it was their last trip to town. Bad news maybe for one of the better and more classy hotels in town. That's a regular visit from a bunch of guys that and women that they won't be having into the future. But is that it then, or does it change anything?
Well, the thing that worries me is that the whole emphasis on this so-called exit from the bailout in December has turned into purely political exercise. I mean, it seems that the government is intent on exiting, preferably without any backup, on the basis that they'll regard it as a feather in their cap. In terms of the reality for everybody else, we're still stuck with the growth and stability pact, we're still stuck with austerity as it is, and why we would not get a backup line of credit, I do not understand. I think it would be the sensible thing to do. Okay, if Michael Noonan was only negotiating, if it was a negotiating ploy to play hardball earlier in the week, fair enough, but I think it would be this notion, it seems to me, that any economics has been overtaken completely by the politics of the situation and the need for the government to say this is a feather in their cap. And that is worrying. The other thing is, even this week, 2 years on, 3 years on, the Troika people are still talking about the vested interests, etc., have not been tackled. And are we to assume so that once they leave town, all that's going to be long fingered again?
John Drennan, speaking of this bailout, Brian Cowan, the former Taoiseach, launching PJ Cunningham's The Lie of the Land last night, as quoted by Mick O'Kane in The Examiner today, as saying he was launching the book. Credit to the government for implementing what had to be achieved and set out in the Troika's plan. We just have to keep plugging away at it. So a bit of generosity, or is that him basically saying, look, we gave them the plan and they implemented it?
I think there might be a little bit of around the houses with that particular one, all right. We sometimes forget Mr. Cowan was no bad man in terms of the verbal barb or the sort of, but it was a generous, in fairness to him, it's a generous statement. And I like the line where he hopes that history will be a little bit kinder to them than how he has felt at that particular time. And it certainly is a very critical and interesting time, and there is, as Michael said, a dangerous toxic mix of both politics and economics. On one level, the government, and in particular I would say Enda and Fine Gael, want to predicate their local election campaign, correctly so, it has to be said, on the image of sort of Enda almost being like Michael Collins in 1922 and Beggar's Bush seeing off the Troika. Well, Michael Collins saw off the black and tans, Enda will see off the Troika. But I would wonder whether they will fully exit without it, because the Irish people are very conservative people and were a bit traumatised, and this notion of Paddy taking the stabilisers off the bike and heading for the motorway straight away mightn't play very well with the electorate. They might want to have a little overdraft in the back pocket, and Michael Noonan might look towards that direction yet.
Terry?
Well, the only problem about that overdraft in the back pocket is that it would be predicated on an even more brutal budget next year, and I'm not sure that the public mind would tolerate that.
Meanwhile, there's the prospect, Eamon Gilmore insisting that there will be, Mick Clifford, a referendum next year on same-sex marriage.
Won't happen. They'll probably decide next week there'll be a referendum, but I don't. I'd be very, very, very surprised if it's happened this side of a general election. Eamon Gilmore talking about sorting out adoption rights by legislation first, politically on the face of it, that's an astute move, but I don't think that will even happen either. I don't think that is part of the forthcoming bill by Alan Shatter in a more general area. So I can't see anything happening this side of a general election on the basis that Fine Gael just don't want to face into what's going to be a serious amount of hassle, and it's also a kick in the teeth to the Constitutional Convention if they don't do so.
So do you think that there will be a referendum but that it will be defeated? Or that they
I don't think there will be one this side of the general. Eventually there'll be a referendum, but I don't think it'll happen this side of a general election.
Yeah, I think the government are on a bit of a cleft stick on this particular one. Most people within Leinster House are for gay marriage in theory, but the practice of a referendum is a different matter altogether. But, you know, the constitutional convention has been rather like Shannon reform, and how well that went has been a central plank of this government's image of itself as a reforming new government attempting to recreate the state. So the problem, of course, is that if they try, if it becomes difficult and if it heads towards 2015, and within politics all eyes will be on the local elections within the new year, once you head towards 2015 it becomes increasingly difficult for governments to take new initiatives as they come towards general elections.
Terry Prawn, does Labour not need to be seen to deliver on relatively cost-free initiatives like this in order to have some credibility going into elections, be they local, European or ultimately the general election?
Yes. Simple yes, that's it. And this is one that they could deliver on, because this is one where even 5 years ago, I'm not sure they could have delivered on, but now I think they could, because people have looked at the civil partnership thing and said, gosh, nothing, the ceiling didn't fall in and that worked reasonably well. And the people who campaigned for civil partnership are now saying, yeah, but there's, I think it's something like 73 basic rights that people in civil partnerships don't have that people who are in marriages do. And there's a sort of a readiness to move on. The issue, if there is an issue that will crease that willingness to move on, is the adoption issue, because that there's an atavistic reaction on that one that can change even the most liberal attitudes.
It's also interesting, yesterday you, David Quinn, on with Ciara Conway.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know, David Quinn always puts a very good case forward from his point of view, but I detected a certain note of slight desperation. I mean, for people of that ilk, people on that conservative wing, this is the Alamo for these people as far as that's concerned. And you're going to see it's going to be a serious, serious campaign if it comes to it. And those who are advocating for it would want to be very, very politically astute in how they approach it.
Fianna Fáil are on record, at least the party leader, Micheál Martin. It doesn't mean he necessarily will have the party behind him, as we know from experience, John Drennan. He's on record as saying he supports this measure. Fine Gael, the position is less clear.
It is less clear to a certain extent now. I mean, on the issue of the Alamo, I think very much in terms of moral issues and who would leap from the party ranks, that was very much decided in terms of abortion rather than that was a very different issue. That was a fundamental pledge within their approach to the electorate, as distinct from gay marriage. So I don't think it may pose the Taoiseach with quite so many difficulties as he either fears one or perhaps two hopes, because his own position on gay marriage has remained remarkably unclear. One slight caveat in terms of what Terry has said in terms of Labour's reputation is that, yes, by all means, they have prioritised that particular issue. But if Labour is to recover, it is far more in the areas of public sector pay in reversing cuts. Gay marriage will not save Labour. It would be the equivalent of a fellow falling out of a plane, grasping a feather and hoping that it might carry him down to the ground. That will not happen.
And finally and briefly, news today, Ulster Bank are sticking around, okay, in a smaller capacity than was there previously, but Danske going, they've taken something of a hit, like 3.8 billion between the start of 2008 and the end of 2012. ACC gone as well. We're back to the days of little enough choice, Terry.
Yeah, the thing is that in this regard, I'm a really ordinary person. I just have a current account. I didn't really notice the difference when there were 8 or 9 banks competing fiercely, and I'm unlikely to notice the difference now.
They're competing to throw money at us at the time, I think.
I was taught by a Marxist, it must have been, as a small buy, that it doesn't really matter in one sense, in the sense that whether you're walking into a bank to give money or take money, they're robbing you anyway.
So,
yeah, Ulster Bank, you have to hope they stay, but ultimately it'll depend on the economy. If it's not going to be worth their while, they've created a mini NAMA inside an RBS now, and they're only going to stay if it's going to be worth their while. So if the economy doesn't pick up, I wouldn't be holding my breath.
Michael Clifford, Terry Prawn, John Drennan, thank you all for being with us. It's Friday, the last programme for this midterm week.